All right, Kiss Army, welcome to the Kiss FAQ podcast. Thank you for giving us your time today and letting us into your head. I hope we don't do any damage. This is a Kiss-related podcast by the board for the board. We hope that you enjoy.
All right, welcome to the show. Welcome to the Kiss FAQ podcast. I said there's going to be a little gap between those two videos.
You got it, though. I got it.
There we go.
That's right. So
thanks for joining us this week. We do have a topic planned. Daniel has stayed up early. He's got a really cool Elvis LP back there as well.
Yes. Blue vinyl?
Show us your Elvis LP.
Moody blue.
What do you want to see?
He said he wants you to show it, Daniel. Come on.
Yeah.
Half asleep there. So.
My first Elvis album.
There you go.
Yeah. There you go. Awesome.
I got that one.
Moody Blue. Great album.
Yeah, nice. All right. So Daniel's obviously here. Marcus mm-hmm. Almighty Mark.
Greetings.
And 69th Blizzard Ken. So.
Hello.
You know what? David Parrish, AB, Bill Phelps, Opal Archive, Ronnie Parker, thanks for joining us live, and everyone else who'll pop into the stream at some point. Chime in with your comments and your thoughts today, because we're going to start off with a couple of the videos that have popped up today. We'll make Mike Brun wait for a moment, but Pepe Castro is doing Castro. I don't know why I went to the British speak there for a minute. Is doing the rounds with a very kind of upset podcast appearance on a Deke Alive, you know, basically going off a bit on Steve Brown denigrating all of the other recorded works of both Ace Frehley and Kiss, and naturally the
videos
that he was working on with Ace prior to Steve appearing on the scene. Let's get your guys' take on, you know, does Pepe have a case, Mark?
I don't know. I mean, look, I mean, to be honest, I didn't really catch that podcast that they did. But, you know, let's just put it this way. In a nutshell, what was the complaint? Was it the complaint that Steve was taking the credit again kind of thing?
Saying that Pepe's stuff was crap, basically. You know, that he's been denigrating Pepe in public.
And
Pepe that was all Ace on guitars, lots of Ace on guitars, all Ace on, you know, vocals as well.
Well, I'll just say this. I've heard a few interviews with Steve Brown, and I haven't caught one yet that he said anything about Pepe, so maybe I haven't heard the right interviews yet. But from the ones that I've heard, I haven't heard him denigrate anything about, you know, that, you know. But you know, look, I wasn't too surprised to hear this kind of stuff, because, you know, when a record does really good, everybody wants credit. Everybody wants to suddenly be in the picture about it, that they had some kind of influence in it or some kind of take on. They always have some kind of take on it, but. You know, why can't we just be happy for Ace that the record's doing good? You know, like everybody wanted a fantastic Ace album. Now he has a fantastic Ace album, and now there's problems and people coming out of the woodwork now, you know?
Well, yeah, and one of the other things that's come out of the woodwork is forgetting one of the co-writers on Up in the Sky, who's a Scandinavian, who's quite well known in Daniel's part of the world, you know. And that's happened before with Sebastian. Ken, give us your reason as you're about to take that sip.
Is he drinking?
I just sit here waiting.
Let's spit it out. Oh, that's a root beer.
Oh, I was going to say, I've never seen you drink alcohol on a podcast.
Not too often. Yeah, I mean, whatever. I mean, Steve Brown has said some things, and he's, you know, just coming back to bite him a little bit. I think some of the things he probably shouldn't say. Just keep quiet about it. So, yeah, Pepe Castro, you know, he's, I guess, upset. And maybe rightly so. You know, Steve Brown basically said that, you know, all the stuff before 10,000 Volts was mediocre, basically. I wouldn't call those albums mediocre. I mean, they may not be great albums, but they're, you know, they're still good enough. So, yeah, just, you know. Keep it
Trouble Walking is good, but the rest of them do have a lot of filler, you know.
There's filler. Yeah, exactly. But, you know, they're not horrible albums.
No. Yeah, quite a few folks are chiming in that they've not seen it. You know, Mark's also admitted that he's not seen it, so he's just going by what I said. You know, go and check it out. It is on the FAQ, and you'll be able to find it on YouTube. And the good thing about Adika, I hope I'm saying it's name right, sorry if I'm not, is that it does include the clips of Steve talking, so he provides the evidence mixed in with this, so that you do, obviously anything can be taken out of context, as I well know from using quotes and being told off for misconstruing them, or the person didn't like how they were placed, but you know that's part of my gig. You know, go and check it out for yourself if you haven't. You know, I think it's only like 8 minutes long anyway, so it's not going to burn too much of anyone's remaining lifespan. Daniel.
I just think that Trickster guy is a bit full of himself. He got a bit carried away in the interviews he did. I think he should.
Come on.
I think he got somewhat like a bit like a megalomania almost, because he thinks he's created this great album and he wants the world to know it. And at times he's said too much, this guy. And I heard the original interview. I think he dropped some small bombs all over that interview, the original one. So I feel for this other guy. I mean, I would also be very irritated with this Brown guy saying that everything else is crap, but my stuff, it's the greatest, and I did most of the work. And we all know Ace was a bit upset as well. It seems like he made a call to Brown and asked him, what the hell are you talking about? So yeah. I think this guy got him. Yeah, but he still has to understand that he's playing the second fiddle. He's not the main character. Even if it was a reality, he has to play that part, mm-hmm. or he won't ever be able to write one of these geezer rockers again, because they need some help, but they don't want the world to know all the help they got.
I'll make a bet with you, Daniel. How much you want to make a bet he'll make another record with him? Even after all this stuff, you want to make a bet that he'll make another record with
him? He is going to.
Yeah, he will. You know why? Because he knows it's the best thing he's done in a while, and he knows he had he probably had not that much to do with it, and he knows if he wants to make another good record like that, he's going to need a guy like that again.
I still think that guy should shut the hell up and understand that Ace is a star, and he's the second fiddle. He's no one.
Yeah. Ace is the talent, Mark.
Well, of course he's a talent.
You agree with it or not, it is his name, his stature, his recognition. Steve Brown is just another tool in the toolbox. Sorry, Steve, but welcome to the club. You're a pen to be used until the ink runs out, and then a new pen will be obtained. It is simply, you know, I've got absolutely no dog in this fight. I don't give two shits either way. But Pepe Castro is a very important part in Ace's story, Blues Magoos. You listen to the Love Gun riff. That's from the Blues Magoos. You know, early guitar. We've had it in interviews on that Tim did for the solo albums book, Pepe's importance. Pepe runs through whole of history when it comes to Ace. And Steve Brown is in like the last of history. When it comes to Ace. So, yes, Steve Brown has every reason to be 100% proud of the work that he did with Ace in delivering of 10,000 Volts. It is a very cohesive and consistent album throughout, and that's not going to change any of the naysayers' opinions on it. So he should be proud of that. But Ace still plays guitar in it. Ace still sings every song on it.
Yeah.
And is Ace's signature all throughout it. And we've talked about other people doing solos and bass. And we talked about Tom Harper on Shandy. Gene comes in the next day and says, oh, that sounds fine. Leave it. There's never been, you know, except when it happens without you knowing on Sweet Pain, you know, a problem with being replaced in the studio, the Wrecking Crew. Were the backing musicians on how many fucking recordings in the late 50s and 60s?
60s.
So that's not the end of the world. Yeah, I know people want Ace to play everything. For the four members of KISS to live in that mansion together, to be able to sing Kumbaya before they sit down and eat virgins. It's just not reality.
The difference between Gene, for example, and Ace, it seems that Gene has no problem admitting that he doesn't do stuff on records. He's openly come out and said it. He's not going to sit there and go on interviews and start crying that, he didn't do this and people are saying that I didn't play on it. He'll openly admit it. He doesn't have that sort of ego, I guess, about that part of it,
When you're working for someone, you need to be careful about what you talk about. You are an employee for hire and for unhire, for that matter, which is why I've never spoken about Universal projects like some other people have, simply because, it hasn't done much good for them.
You don't
want to
rock the boat.
I'm not a spokesperson for anyone other than myself. Daniel.
In comparison, Anton Figg never said a word about, well, I ruled on Unmasked. I was a star on Dynasty. Or that Swedish guy that wrote most of Live to Win for Paul Stanley. He never tooted his own horn and said, well, I brought most of the material. The stuff he had before was crap. But thanks to me, the album is a great one. So I think people who get hired to help you,
that album's terrible,
need to shut the hell. Yeah, you might think so, but you also like Rush, so that's something.
But on the other hand,
I think this guy is full of himself. He got carried away. I think he didn't mean to be saying all this kind of stuff, but everyone is telling him how great the album is, so he is proud and he wants the world to know just how much he's been doing, and that's fine. But If he could have thought a bit more, I think he
worded
regretted
it differently.
I think he regretted some of the stuff he said, really, and it wasn't meant to come out as it did, but it did, and maybe he learned from this.
But I think you made a good
point. That's old news about Naked City, by the way. Naked City started out with Balance, and Gene took it because he liked it and changed it around. So I also like Rush.
Yeah.
Okay, Rush sucks.
Oh, early God,
Rush,
people.
I like.
Rush is great. You guys just don't want to admit it, and that's fine.
All right, Ken, any additional thoughts on this?
No, I'll stop it. I'm not going to.
Well,
I think you went on enough about it.
Okay, so now, since we've gone on enough about that, Mike Brunn interviewed Doc McGee for the third time today and asked some of the questions that a lot of KISS fans have been wondering. And get us started, Ken. What did you think of that interview?
Well, it's pretty good. A lot of it's the same stuff. But some of the points that I wrote down that came up in the interview were those negotiations regarding their KISS's, I guess the rights to KISS or whatever, they're selling some of the rights off or whatever their name, that should be wrapped up in the next, 2 or 3 months. And then also, KISS will keep a percentage of the rights so they can still, approve and disapprove.
Then what's the fucking point?
Exactly. I was just going to say the same thing.
I don't know.
Why would anyone buy something that they're going to still have to go to Gene and Paul to get approvals for? What the fuck is the point in spending money on something that you don't
control? Exactly. If I buy it from him, I want full control. So
I'm curious what kind of dummy's going to
do whatever I want with it, right?
Who are the people who actually have put up money to run around getting approvals from Gene and Paul?
I'd love to know that.
Yeah, so I don't know.
Sorry, that triggered me.
Some other stuff is, let's see, plans, the plans for, this is maybe just, he's just saying this, but plans for the box sets and more box sets and off the soundboards, you know, will continue in the future, obviously after whatever that other thing happens. If someone approves, they sell it or whatever, or decide not to sell it. I don't know. Documentary is in the works. This is a documentary on the final 50 shows regarding the final 50. So it's just a little portion. I would have rather had a nice.
It's an addendum to the A&E thing, right?
Yeah, but I think I want something bigger than the A&E thing. I'd love to have something, you know, a real documentary. But I don't know. It may be okay. It may be interesting. I don't know how it's going to sell if they try to sell that.
Hey, take it easy.
It's just the 50 shows. The biopic is still in play. And supposedly it might start filming in August. That's the latest from Doc on that. Also, they plan on doing a cruise, but Doc doesn't know if Kiss will be on the cruise. So I don't know. I'm like, Kiss may not be on the cruise. It may be a Kiss cruise, but without Kiss, I don't know. It may or may not. Also, the Avatar
Soul Station cruise.
Yeah,
there you go.
Soul Station and Gene Simmons band, right? Still working are the you know working on are the Avatars. He said, you know, should be ready 2026 or 2027. There is a possibility that Gene and Paul will actually write a couple of songs. He said too. I don't know if I believe that at all. A venue will need to be built for that.
Steve Brown's available.
Kind of like ABBA. You know, they have that venue for their. Avatars. And I would think they would want to put it in Vegas. That's just my thoughts on that, if they were going to do it.
No, don't do it there.
They're not going to put it in Canada.
They're going to be, so. You know how many things they're going to be competing with in Las Vegas? You think people are going to go there and say, I have all these things to pick from. I have all these things to choose from in Vegas. I'm going to go see Kiss. No, that's not going to happen. Go somewhere else.
Monster
Where movie, else are they going to put
Kiss
it?
Just golf.
Yeah, okay. I'm just saying, but if you have all those other options, right, entertainment-wise, you know.
Yeah, I just think Vegas makes the most sense to me, at least.
L.A. somewhere, man.
And they're gonna, you know, supposedly they are going to recreate, you know, past shows, performances, supposedly, concerts. So
that makes sense.
If that's what they're gonna do, you know, if they can do that, that'd be cool if it works. The other thing about let's see, Kiss owns the rights to Sonic Boom. That's why it showed up on streaming
Spotify,
which I don't have, I don't use, but I refuse to use it actually.
Good boy.
Yeah, and hopefully there'll be a product. You know, they'll be able to put out maybe a repressing of Sonic Boom because there's only so many going around. You can't find them anymore, and they're very expensive. So. Their thing is, it was Doc's idea about having those avatars at the end of the Madison Square Garden. He took credit for that.
That was the only point where I actually screamed at the screen, saying, Mike, ask him, don't you think that was a mistake? You know, that's, you know, Mike does a good job. You
Doc
know,
thinks yeah. it was a great idea.
You have to be respectful of your guests and be careful about some of the probing questions and counters that you do. He did ask about the lawsuit. I mean, Doc then went into politician mode and basically said, yeah, we sue people all the time. Yeah, which is why it was dismissed. Right, Doc? Sorry, please continue.
That's all I got. I mean, there might be a couple other things I missed, Julian, if you remember anything else from that. But it was a good interview, you know.
So. No, he was asked about the gold tickets for Madison Square.
Oh, the gold, yeah.
And then the number came down to 2,500 per show, but none were given out at the first show. So I get the feeling Kiss either doesn't want to talk about it or they don't know. But he did also mention that there were a lot of hassles with Madison Square Garden, the facility, which I know for a fact to be true. And anyone who knows anything about Madison Square Garden knows that it's a pain in the ass, as is Hollywood Bowl for that matter. Some venues are just challenges for anything. But, you know, when your music venue has tougher security than the fucking local airports, you know something's wrong. So no one got any closure. Mike did also mention how he had mentioned trying to make good on the Dubai product. You know, and right. Mike is to be congratulated for that. There was another unboxing video this week from someone who got a goodie box to make good. And again, I was made whole. You know, so people have, at least been able to put it behind them. Not everyone. Some people didn't have the receipts. I don't know how that would be possible. Just present the credit screen.
The screen. Yeah.
So, on balance, again, Doc is not going to give you the answers to the questions that you might necessarily want in a manner that you expect. And a good interviewer is just going to let him talk as much as possible. And again, I think Mike got some pretty good things out of it. Daniel, did you manage to watch the interview at all today?
Actually, I've been busting my ass trying to get through all these albums that we needed to listen to for this episode. So
we're supposed sorry
to,
for you.
I had to choose between going through these Van Halen albums or listening to
worth
this
it?
Interview. Well, at times, I think. At times. I found some stuff I hadn't really discovered previously. But I started listening to the interview, but I fell asleep. You know, it's... it's, you know, over here it's after midnight. So just that's like an hour ago, I started listening to it, but I fell asleep. And then, quarter left until we start. So I had to run down and, you know, get this stuff going. So, but it was a great summary by the voice of reason. So I don't think I need to go and listen to it now. It seems like he took some notes and presented a good summary there.
Thank you, Ken, for the report. Mark, is there anything you'd like to comment on before we get into the topic, which Daniel's hinted at?
Yes, two things. Number one, in the future, I'm going to refer to Ken for all interviews that are done because his summary of them are much better than most of the interviews that happen, and they're more concise and to the point. So I will refer to Ken from this point on so I don't have to watch an hour and a half of nonsense. He'll refer it but down to like the 20-minute essentials. Thank you very much, the voice of reason, for that. And also, I was going to say, I don't know about you guys, but didn't you notice that didn't Doc look actually for once in his life really relaxed and looked like he's having a good time being off the road finally and relaxing a little bit more? He actually looks
5 years they were on the road.
That's what I'm saying. But doesn't he look good now? Doesn't he look like he's like more chilled out, enjoying the downtime a bit? That it's great. Before he looked really stressed out and he looked really like, you know, in rough shape. I think now the time off is doing him some good. The interview, it is what it is. I mean, you know, he's always been that kind of, you know, diverting the questions that you really want the answers for. You know, the politician, as Ken says, you know, he's in politic mode there, right? So, but, you know, am I surprised? No, you know, because you're not going to get the real deep answers that you want. But good for Mike for getting him on his show again and talking with him and, you know, getting what we did get out of it. And again, I think we should have a special, you know, Ken should make his own little channel where it's like after the interview with Ken Keenan, you know, this is what you need to know from this interview.
Bullet points.
Yeah, exactly. Bullet point comments of all the interviews.
With the voice of reason.
If I go over perfectly.
All right, Daniel, why don't you introduce this week's topic and how and why you came up with this?
Yeah, mostly because we have been getting some traction doing these versus episodes, Kiss albums versus other albums. We did a 70s version a few weeks back, and previously we did an 80s version as well. So I thought it would be cool to match up the last Kiss albums. You know, Revenge, Carnival of Souls, Psycho Circus, Monster, that kind of stuff, against other albums and other artists that has been around for a long time, you know, sort of their swan songs or albums from where they were past their prime, and listen to them and compare them. And boy, was that a bad idea? Because I had to listen to some albums that I really didn't care for that much. But on the other hand, it was pretty interesting to rediscover some of these albums and finding some gems on them that I had forgotten all about. Especially one or two albums that really surprised me that were way better than I thought. And it's kind of cool to dabble with other bands on the podcast as well. So someone here is saying, David, he thinks Monster will lose. Well, you know this is a Kiss podcast, so this is the place where it can win. We'll see.
Well, Daniel, I got to ask you before we start this. I'm very curious, which of these albums have you not heard? I mean, when I saw the list, I was like, I've heard all these albums 1,000 times. I'm just wondering which ones you've never heard.
I've heard them, but it was a long time ago. Like the final Aerosmith album, I don't think I gave it more than one listen.
It's terrible, that album. Anyways.
The final Van Halen album, didn't listen to that too many times as well. So it was kind of fun, but kind of, it was, at times it felt like I had homework, you know. I have to do this, but it's not that fun. But I need to do it, and I did it.
Well, why don't we jump into 1992, and the three albums that were selected, explain why they're in the list, other than the Kiss one, which is obvious, because there were a lot of albums released in 1992, so everyone out there, you can chime in with some that you think should have been measured against Revenge. Okay, so I got to read it?
Jesus. Yeah, you read it.
I thought Daniel was going to do it.
No,
anyway. All right, do it, so, Julian. We're going to put Revenge up against Def Leppard's Adrenalize. And Wasp, The Crimson Idol. So, Ken.
Well, I'm going to have to side with Lalani on this one because I know he would pick Revenge over either of these. Def Leppard, I think there's only really one good song on that as far as I'm concerned.
No.
Adrenalize. I really don't like that album. And the one song that was the big kind of hit song on it sounds like a rewrite of Pour Some Sugar on Me.
Let's Get Rocked.
Yeah. It sounds like every other one. So that album really didn't do anything for me. I mean, after Pyromania, I was kind of like not too excited with Def Leppard too much anymore, as much. And it's kind of went downhill a little bit from there. And then Wasp, who I like. And I liked Wasp, but I liked their early stuff. I thought that one was a pretty good album. You know, it had some good stuff on there. But Revenge, you know, being a Kiss fan, of course, but you know, I think Revenge is a better, consistent, you know, hard rocking album, better produced, too. On the other hand, better produced even than the Def Leppard's. So, yeah, I got to go with Revenge on that.
All right, Daniel.
Well, I think all three albums are pretty solid. The problem with the Def Leppard album is when it was released, they were so out of fashion. I remember thinking that when it was released, you know, it was in the era of grunge. So Def Leppard was on the other side of the board, so to speak, on the other side. And they were still sounding like an 80s band, I think, on this record. Later on, they tried different stuff, like on that Slang album, didn't really work. But I still feel this is a pretty solid Def Leppard album. Let's Get Rocked is a pretty fun song, but very 80s. And I also like that one, Making Love
Like a Man. Yeah,
that was a cool song. Chorus. And so Julian disagrees.
Julian loves it. He's just pretending.
And I also, a strong point with Def Leppard. Def Leppard always managed to do some really sappy ballads that are pretty good. Good to go out and dance with a girl to. And they had one or two on this album. I think one that stood out for me was Stand Up, Kick Love Into Motion. I think that's
a really good song.
A really good and beautiful song. And also the chorus on "Have You Ever Needed Someone So Bad?" It's a bit syrupy, it's a bit sappy, but you can't deny the quality in the song. So I think there's a lot of quality on this album, even though people slam it and think that it's bad. It's got a lot of really bad reviews, I remember, back in 92. But I think it's a bit unfair because it's still a Def Leppard album, still true to the way Def Leppard sounded in the mid to late 80s. So I think it's a pretty cool album. On the other hand, Revenge was a strong comeback for Kiss, and we have talked about Revenge a lot, so I won't get too much into that. But then you have Wasp, and I think this was a great comeback for Blackie. He put a lot of effort into this album, and it was this story about Jonathan, and he had a concept for the album that actually worked. The Kiss concept album a few years earlier, back in 81, didn't work. It was kind of strange with all the strange lyrics. But this Wasp album, I can follow the story and I understand the story. And I think it's a cool story in this album. And I know Blackie Lawless, it's one of his absolute favorite albums. And I like it. I like it a lot. I played it a lot when it came out. And there's loads of... That wasn't me, by the way.
Oh my god!
You all know who that was. But so it's a for me. This was kind of hard, and it was fun. 92 was a pretty cool year. Loads of great albums, but I think these three albums are pretty neck. You know, what do you say? Neck to neck.
Neck and neck.
They are. It's a close call. But I actually have to go with Wasp on this one. I think that's a beautiful album. I love that album to this day. Mm-hmm. Probably the last Wasp album that I really enjoyed. And it was great to hear some of the stuff last year on tour. I think Julian went to a show as well. I don't know how much was playback, but I actually enjoyed the show a whole lot. And a lot of songs from this album were in the show, and it was great. So, Wasp for me.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Mark?
Here we go.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting how people's memories of these records, and I remember Adrenalize when it came out, and just for a quick thing there, I know what Daniel was saying, that they were out of fashion, you know, because of 92, but, you know, that record, surprisingly, was number one in the U.S., number one in the U.K., number one in Switzerland, number one in Australia, number one in Canada, number one in Finland. They weren't so out of style as you think. Number two in Norway. So they really weren't as out of style as you probably think. And plus, when I saw some live footage of them, they were playing big places still, like really, really big still. Thank you, Michael. But, you know... And I have to admit, it's not my favorite Def Leppard album, obviously, Adrenalize. But like Daniel mentioned, though, there's some great songs in there. Stand Up, Kick Love Into Motion is such a great song. I've always loved that. Tear It Down, you know, it's a redone song that they had for a while there already. You know, and it's good. I mean, you know what they were trying to do. They just wanted to follow up a huge record with then possibly another one. Revenge is one of those records, like I said before, I really loved when it came out. I was surprised at how heavy it was, so it always had a great place in my heart, this album. And Wasp is one of these albums where I was really surprised because, you know, I did follow Wasp with my friends. My one friend, he's a huge Wasp fan. Like, he had everything. And every time you were in his car, you either had The Last Command in his car or something was playing all the time from Wasp. So... I think it was a really good record. I mean, Headless Children was okay. I thought that was an okay record, but this one really was a step up, you know, in my opinion, as far as songwriting and stuff like that. It was really good. So honestly, this was sort of a more difficult choice to make than it would appear, because to me, it's the Kiss album was not a runaway by any stretch of the imagination on this, I don't think. But I think overall, though, I think I'm still going to have to go with the Kiss one, just only because I think that there are still things about the Def Leppard one that, you know, I listen back to it and kind of cringe on a few things. And the Wasp thing, as much as I've always liked this album, I've never been the biggest Wasp fan. So it would be kind of disingenuous for me to pick it over Kiss, because I think even their best album to me might not beat out a Kiss record that I'm kind of like even half good on. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So Val, I agree. Headless is much better than Crimson Idol. I have one major problem with Crimson Idol. I think it's a very creative bit of work. It has a great flow, a pretty cool story. I can't stand the guitar tone. It just becomes withering. And the guitar tone and the production on it by the end just leaves my fucking head hurting. I love Still Not Black Enough way more because it's toned down ever so slightly from that. And I also think the songs are better, pound for pound, for my taste. So sue me. Someone mentioned Ronnie Parker. Thank you. That would have either of those are going to give it give these more of a run for the money for my taste than the two that were picked. Dehumanizer is absolutely outstanding. Fear of the Dark is a little patchy, but
Images and Words.
It's still incredibly song. All right, Adrenalize. Yeah, I love Def Leppard. But this is where they lost the fucking plot. It was the balance of syrupy shit versus rocking shit. And obviously they were reeling from the loss of Steve Clark. And Phil's doing all the guitars. And you can tell he's doing all the fucking guitars. There's way too much bumblebee noodle shit. It's really where that trajectory increases. But you've mentioned Stand Up. Kick Love into Motion, out fucking standing song. White Lightning is a fantastic song. But the rest of it, you know, Let's Get Rocked was novelty. Heaven is vomit. Mm-hmm. Make Love Like a Man, vomit. Tonight is absolutely gorgeous. Personal Property is garbage. Have You Ever Needed Someone So Bad? Fantastic. I Want to Touch You is shit. Tear It Down, a recycle from Hysteria, is outstanding. I got the Japanese or the bonus track version, which came with She's Too Tough on it and Miss You in a Heartbeat. So, you know, those as bonus tracks are way better than half the songs that are on the damn album. So I got to go with Kiss on that and simply by the strengths of that, the albums that I like more. No, I haven't lost my mind. It's my mind, not yours.
I agree with David.
I've always said I like Still Not Black Enough way more than Crimson. Mm. You know, I was the guy screaming for Black Forever at those Wasp shows. Okay. You know? So, and Goodbye America. So,
yeah, that's a good song. Right. I like that one.
Yeah, Revenge.
You know, it's interesting. I was kind of secretly hoping Ken would have picked a Dream Theater's Images and Words for this, because that would have been a complete runaway for me if that would have been on there. That was my King's album. X. Sorry?
King's X.
Yeah, like there's lots of...
These weren't even mine.
It's a good year. It's a good
year. The Humanizer is a great album, though. Yeah. Absolutely fantastic.
Mark, these were not even my picks.
Oh, they were Daniel's. Okay, sorry.
Daniel's
sorry about that, Mark. Sorry about
that's
that.
Okay.
I said I would have picked Countdown to Extinction.
I thought about that one, but I think it's a bit too different from Kiss, a bit too far off. But I think Megadeth will pop up later, thanks to Julian, and Iron Maiden will also pop up later on with an album. So we'll get into those bands in a minute.
All right, well, let's move on into 1997 and the next album that comes out from Kiss is Carnival of Souls. And I injected, what were your original picks? Because I injected Motley Crue's Generation Swine.
I don't remember.
You originally had Judas Priest's Jugulator.
But the Jugulator is still in there, is it? Isn't it?
It is.
I know. I left it in there so that I could bash
Thank
it.
Thank you. I won't bash it.
All right, Mark, might get us started. 1997.
Okay, so this is going to be one of these ones where I can already hear the booing coming from the peanut gallery on this one. Carnival of Souls is never been my favorite Kiss record. There's probably like 2-3 songs at the most that are good on this album overall. Generation Swine is such a bad Motley Crue. I don't know. I think I've listened to it maybe 3 times in full. And well, I mean, once it gets to Brandon and that's, I just can't listen to it anymore. It's just such a fucking bad song. That's unbelievable. True. You know, it's just, it's, what I don't know what they were thinking with this record. I mean, Mick Mars even was hit the roof when they were making this album, like what they were thinking when they made this, you know, just a terrible, terrible record. But I think me and Daniel might see eye to eye on this. But when Jugulator came out, at first, I remember when I went to the record store, they had a cassette single for Bullet Train that was available. You could just take for free from the record store. So I brought it home, listened to it. And I was like, wow, this is really good, much better than I thought it would be, because I didn't know too much about, you know, Ripper Owens at that time, right? And when I heard him sing, I was like, wow, when he died, chorus, bullet train. It sounds like a mix of Dio and Halford, the way he sings that. So I was like, this is connecting with me perfectly, okay? And the opening track when I got the album, Jugulator, like that is more vicious and heavier than most stuff that they did ever. Like that whole... Jugulator, that thing is so fucking good. Yeah, there's a couple of songs in there that are a little weak. You know, Burn in Hell's not that great. You know, there's a few songs in there, but I mean, you know, Bloodstained is really good. Cathedral Spirals is probably one of the best songs they've done. Such a fucking good song. That so I'm gonna have to say sorry, people, but Jugulator's got my vote for out of these three, easy.
Well, okay. Let's go to the voice of reason, Ken.
All right, Carnival Souls. And maybe it's because I've listened to Carnival Souls a million times, but I think just the all the Gene songs and a couple of the Paul Stanley songs are good enough to beat both of those other albums. Motley Crue, I just didn't get it all.
Yeah.
It was a strange to me, strange listen. Now Judas Priest, it was interesting. But for something didn't sound like Judas Priest to me. It sounded like someone trying to be Judas Priest, but even though it is Judas Priest, I really missed, you know, Rob Halford. I really just miss, I guess, his vocals or something, or his writing. So while it's played well, they tear it up pretty darn good. I don't, you know, it's nothing I want to listen to. I really didn't enjoy it. I really didn't enjoy it. So I got to go with Carnival of Souls, believe it or not.
Yeah. Jugulator is like a musical colonoscopy.
This guy, I don't know what this guy's talking about.
Cathedral Spires is way the off. Only high point on that album. Yeah. Everything about that album is garbage. The cover. The biggest problem with it is lyrics by Glenn Tipton. There are no co-writes. You know, and that really is the problem. I got like halfway through the CD when I got the promo when it came out, and I threw it down the garbage chute. It was so bad. I'm like, and I have refused to listen to it since. It was just so fucking atrocious.
I don't know what these guys are listening to, Daniel.
I'm like, what is this shit? And I listened to Biohazard. I listened to Therapy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like that. Jugulator. So what's the other one? Generation Swine. Oh, wow. I was so happy when that came out. And
really?
I still enjoy quite a lot of the album. It's got some good songs on it. For the price of admission, I'm going to say A Rat Like Me is enough of a win to nearly beat anything. Same with Glitter. Same with Beauty. Is anybody out there? Find myself. And yeah, Brandon is fucking awful, and it's not surprising that it's followed by a song, a bonus song, called Song to Slit Your Wrist By, because I think that's a response to Brandon. That is atrocious. You know, Generation Swine as a song is not great. But again, A Rat Like Me is an absolutely fucking outstanding rock song, but not enough to beat Carnival of Souls for what it's worth. Again, that was just wrapped up in the time for me, and it was so fun having a leaked, unreleased full Kiss album. Master and Slave is still a really cool song. The Jungle is still a really cool song. Childhood's End, it's still got some really good songs, even though it's got really god-awful production and pretty bad paper boxes for drums.
You know, I think I'm starting to understand one thing, though, quickly before we get to Daniel. I think, and I remember hearing this on other kind of podcasts that I was on where we talk about other records, and a lot of this has to do with entry point, I think, too. Like when people get into certain bands, I think that has a lot to do with it because, I mean, I was, when I was young, I was really into like extreme metal stuff, like really heavy stuff. So, you know, back in the day when I was younger, Kiss and stuff like that, to me, that it never seemed heavy to me. It was like, you know, it just seemed like classic rock shit to me compared to some of this other stuff. Much later, I got into understanding, you know, the beauty of Kiss and the music and how it sounds and, you know, where it belongs in the pantheon of rock music. But, you know, back then when I was in my 20s and stuff like that, when I heard Jugulator, to me, I was like, this is real shit, like real metal, you know, like that was what I was all about then. Back then, you know, those other bands were just seemed like they were just washed up stuff at that point to me, right? But it's again, it's about when you get into the music and when you start and stuff like that too. So I can't be too surprised with some of the reactions, right?
Okay, Ken, let's try again.
try again. Well, David, please, out of the blue. Oh man, oh, gosh, I love that album. Anyway, what are we going over?
No, didn't Daniel have to do his? Daniel didn't do his thing yet.
It's Daniel, right? Yeah. I already did it.
I think you messed up.
I already picked. I already picked
the guy whose name that begins with D.
Yeah. So I think three interesting albums. Initially, Carnival of Souls was a letdown for me. I got the bootleg version, as you guys did as well. I guess wasn't too impressed. But as a Kiss fan, as Ken mentioned. If you remember what Ken said, he said that he listened to the album hundreds of times, and I think that made me like the album. You know, when you listen to an album enough times, sometimes it grows on you. So I really like some of the stuff on that album. Hate, Take a Look in the Mirror, and some of the other Gene songs, as you said, Ken. I like them. I can appreciate those songs today. Generation Swine was a pretty interesting record because I really loved the previous one with Kurabi that was called just Motley Crue. That's one of my favorite Motley Crue albums. They took a whole different path and managed to make it sound cool. Kiss didn't really manage to do that with Carnival of Souls. But Generation Swine, it was mostly a Kurabi-written album. Kurabi was there for the sessions, but got kicked out of the band more or less. And Vince Neil had some problems, you know, knowing how to approach the songs, and you can hear that at times. But I do find some stuff here that I liked. Afraid, I think, is a mostly the softer songs, I think, sounds great. They sound great. Afraid and Glitter, of course, those were the two standouts for me. But then there are some really strange songs like Rocket Ship. And why the hell didn't they put like Shout at the Devil on the record? Shout at the Devil 97. I think that was kind of, that didn't really work. And we have to mention Brandon once again. Kiss had a pretty similar song, I think, when they made the guitarist sing the final song on Carnival of Souls. Didn't work either, you know, I Walk Alone. But Brandon is even crappier than that. And wasn't Brandon the one who clocked Tommy Lee a few years ago, knocked him out cold, and put it out on YouTube? I think that's pretty funny. Or tragic. I don't know. Brandon, I love you and everything. And then but he got punched out by Brandon, and it got out there on the internet. I think that says all about that song. It was a big mistake. And then we move on to Jugulator. The previous album from Judas Priest was released in 90. 7 years previously, and that's probably my favorite Judas Priest album.
Same here.
Really?
And this one isn't too far behind. I was pleasantly surprised by this Ripper Owens, and I really liked his vocal right off the bat. And I actually went to see them in Stockholm, and they killed it. They nailed it. We weren't too many people there, I think maybe 1,000, and he kicked some ass. So this one was a favorite record for me when I was a young, frustrated, angry man. It was perfect. I love the vocals and some great stuff on this. Almost, I also enjoy the sound effects on this song. They put a whole lot of effort into the sound effects, so it's got this cinematic feel to it. The whole album, I really enjoy the feel of it. And my two favorite songs are Cathedral Spires. That's just an epic song. And I actually like Abductors. I think there's a really cool riff in that one. So those two are my two favorites. But Jugulator, what a cool song. And there's loads of cool songs. And every song is heavy. Even the weaker songs are really, really heavy. Mm-hmm. So it's an easy picking for me. I pick Jugulator over the other two. Wow. And that makes Jugulator the winner, or...
Yes.
Is it a draw? I don't remember what Julian picked.
He picked Carnival.
Guaranteed.
Carnival, Jugulator,
Carnival. Yeah. That's carnivals. A tie.
It's a tie. So the audience have to decide the winner. Is it Jugulator or Carnival of Souls? See what they say.
He can never align a Pinot Gallery for this stuff.
Okay, so then Jugulator wins.
Let's move on to 1998. Jeez. And Psycho Circus versus Iron Maiden, Virtual XI, Virtual 11.
11,
And Van Halen 3.
11 of what?
I'm going to start this one.
Yeah.
Because I listened to Van Halen 3 all the way through for the very first time today.
First time?
I have never made it all the way through Van Halen 3 before. Nor shall I ever again. What a fucking stinking pile of garbage. It's a delusional. I've been listening to Right Here, Right Now live for the last few days. And I was just coming out of that, which I'd never listened to either, was that Eddie Van Halen really can make anyone sound fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's not the case. And I love Extreme 3. Oh my God. Yeah. That album is just absolutely amazing. Really good band. Porno Graffiti still have.
Yeah.
They were a really great band. But Gary Cherone is the totally fucking wrong style vocalist. Who's the other guy who was in the picture? Mitch Mallory or Malloy, whatever.
His name was
way better kind of singer. There's a style of singer that does not work with the Southern Californian party rock of Van Halen. And that's what made David Lee Roth so fantastic with that music originally, that Sammy could never be, that Gary certainly never was. Van Halen 3, I tried. I made myself listen to the whole thing, but never again. Virtual 11. It's got the Klansman on it. But you know what? I only love the Klansman when Bruce sings it, because that's what he took. Bruce took that in Rock in Rio, I believe it was, or I can't remember which one of the live albums, because one of them had Sign of the Cross. The other had the Klansman. It's an absolutely fucking epic song. Future Real's really good. There's a couple of really good songs. And I wanted something in 1998 to be able to stick the fork in Psycho Circus for, but I've not been given it, Daniel. So I got to go with Psycho Circus. Ken?
That Iron Maiden, I just couldn't get into at all. I don't know if that's their worst album or what, but I just could not get into that thing at all. It's kind of like how I felt about the Motley Crue one earlier. Now, Van Halen 3, Gary Cherone, he was in great and extreme. Wrong singer from Van Halen. Some of the songs, it sounds like he's trying to be like Sammy Hagar. And then some of the other songs, it sounds like he's trying to sound like David Lee Roth. I hear a little bit of both going on that album. It's just kind of weird, but he never succeeds, and even sounded like either one of them anyway. And I just think his voice was not good for that. The music wasn't the greatest, even though it's great playing and everything. I don't think it's Eddie's best stuff. I think it's a failure, and it's a not an album I would go back to listening at all either. So I have to go with Psycho Circus, even though it's, you know, Psycho Circus, as we know, has some flaws on it, but it has some great classics on it, which are enough to beat those other albums. So,
what do you think about the Iron Maiden?
He didn't like it. He said,
"I didn't like it. I couldn't get into it. I couldn't get into it. It just sounded." I'm feeling it like that's their worst album or something. I mean, it probably is. I'm guessing. I just couldn't get into it. This is the first time I listened to that one, actually, just, you know, the other day. So, I can get into most Iron Maiden stuff. You know, I like a lot of it. So, but that one just didn't work. Missing Bruce too. So,
yeah. Sorry, I was reading the comments and I missed you.
That's twice. You forgot about me.
Well, let's see if I get this right, Daniel.
Why do you hate the voice of reason, Julian? Okay, but this.
Don't answer that.
But no, exactly. Don't. You don't have to answer that. Just leave that hanging there. Okay, so we listened to 12 albums this week. And this was the worst year to me by far. I think all these three albums have their flaws. The Maiden album, like Ken said, is probably the worst of all 12 albums to me. I listened to it all the way through. Nothing stood out. And why the hell they picked that singer is beyond me. I mean, it was a terrible fit. Much worse than Sharon for me in Van Halen. Mm-hmm. I think Sharon, yeah, I don't know if he tried to sound like Sammy Hagar, but at times he did, and I think it worked pretty well. I don't think Sharon is the problem on this album. It's a kind of a weak album all over the place, you know, from the songwriting to the riffs and so on. I don't think a different singer would have made a big difference. It's an okay album to me, but it's far from balanced. Was that their previous one, Balance, with Sammy Hagar? Yeah, I kind of like that one with Wham Bam Amsterdam, and it was still fun. But this one,
it's pretty good.
Yeah, this one is pretty weak, even though I enjoyed some songs, like when Eddie Van Halen played the acoustic guitar on Josefina or whatever that song is called. Pretty fun to listen to, but overall, a weak album. Psycho Circus, on the other hand, half of it is pretty good, half of it is rubbish, but it takes the cake this year, this weak year of 1998.
All right, Mark.
Wow. You know, when I looked at this again, I was like, I'm starting to get the feeling this is purposefully stacked for Kiss. Every album that they're going against are always these shit records. Like, you know, Virtual 11, I had a long-running theory with my friends that I don't think Nico McBrain drummed on this album. Because if you listen to the album in great detail, Nico is a drummer that loves using toms, okay? Yeah. If you watch him live and everything, he's all about... He's all about it. If you listen to Virtual 11 and listen to it closely, there is not a single tom roll on that whole album from beginning to end, if you listen to it closely. So I don't know who the hell drummed on that. It must have been a drum machine or something, but that wasn't Nico McBrain on that. And that album, you know, Future Reel's okay. Klansman is a good song. You know, there's always at least one good song on a Maiden album. But the rest of it is just, I couldn't believe it. I'm a big Maiden guy, man. I love Maiden, okay? When this album came out, it was like a shock to me. I couldn't even believe that this is the same band. Just so weak, this album. I don't know. I felt so... And Van Halen, don't even get me started about Van Halen 3. Van Halen 3, I've listened to it once and then never again. It's unlistenable to me. On headphones, it's the worst listen I've ever heard in my life. It's terrible sounding. I mean, I don't know who mixed this record, but it was terrible sounding. Just absolutely horrific and nothing memorable on this record. I mean, Van Halen albums, I mean, I can go back to and think about all these other records. I can pick out songs from all these Van Halen records I could think of right away, even from Unlawful Carnal Knowledge, 5150, OE12, back to Women and Children First. I can pick out songs. This I can't remember half of them at all. You know, it's terrible. And, you know, and then we got Psycho Circus, which again is another terrible record, but it does have songs like, you know, Psycho Circus, you know, Into the Void is pretty good. The Closer's a good song, but the rest of it is not that good at all. I mean, the real crime in this list is that you didn't pick, for example, Chemical Wedding by Bruce Dickinson, which came out in this same year, which is an absolutely amazing album. That would have killed all of these in an instant. That album would have put Psycho Circus to bed easy, you know. And in 98, there's lots of good shit that came out. I mean, you had, like, you know, Volume 8 from Anthrax, you had, you know, other things like Voodoo from King Diamond, the Soulfly debut came out in that year. There's a lot of things that came out that were, you know,
on you, Blind Guardian.
Yeah, Blind Guardian. There's lots of stuff that came out that was really good in this year. And if you would have but that's the thing. If you would have put that against Psycho Circus would have lost easily, in my opinion.
Well, you guys are missing the point a bit, because I'm trying to pick the best albums. I'm trying to pick bands that are in a, you know what, kind of a similar position. Van Halen bringing in a new singer, Maiden bringing in a new singer, Kiss bringing in, you know, the old members. So they are kind of at a similar point. You don't take like a hot new band and put them in this year.
It's Kiss. They should be able to destroy anything, according to Kiss fans, right?
Well, maybe
destroy, rip and destroy.
Right? Yeah. So, anyways, I have to pick Psycho Circus because those other two are really weak. So I'll have to pick Psycho Circus, but not because I think it's a good record. I just think it's because it's the best of the worst.
Yeah, it was the worst year we had here. Yeah.
Ooh, DLR Band was also came out in 98. Yeah. And System of a Down. Okay, so let's move on then. I got everyone. I didn't ignore any of you.
Yep.
Okay. No, you never know. I'm a complete idiot. Gotta remember that. What year is it? 2009. All right, 2009. Oh, here we go. Heaven and Hell, The Devil You Didn't Want to Know. And then I injected, I can't remember what I deleted, Megadeth's Endgame. Daniel.
Heaven and Hell, we all know that was the comeback album of the Dio lineup in Black Sabbath, but they decided to call themselves Heaven and Hell. I think the whole album is kind of slow and lethargic, and I don't know. I have a problem with Vinny Appice, however you pronounce his name. I don't like his drumming. There's something about his drumming that I think is slow and lethargic. So it fits this album pretty well. I really didn't get into this. I much more prefer the one they released in, was it 93?
Dehumanizer.
The same lineup. Yeah, Dehumanizer. That's a kick-ass album. Lots of energy. But this one is kind of slow, more like Dio solo albums from the mid-90s, like Angry Machines and Strange Highways, if you remember those. Yeah. Heavy, yes, pretty heavy, but slow and not too much that stuck out. So not a favorite of mine. Megadeth, solid album, great musicianship, of course. But I have a hard time listening to a whole album with that guy singing. It's pretty boring vocals, so to speak. He managed to do a lot with kind of limited abilities. He does a lot with limited abilities. You have to give him that. But a whole Megadeth album, not for me. Complex lyric with political motives and stuff like that, not my thing either. Go and play Love Gun. So, too complex for me. I don't know if I'm dumb or something, but I don't like when he's singing about the problems in America and the president doing this. I don't want to listen to that kind of stuff. Pretty uninteresting, but a solid album. It's a pretty good album. You can enjoy the songs anyway. And then you have Sonic Boom from Kiss, which was a surprise to me. I didn't think they could deliver at this level anymore, and it actually made me a Kiss fan once again. I got back into the band after being, you know, listened to other stuff for quite some time. I had almost given up on Kiss, but this was a great comeback album for me. So it holds a special place in my heart. So I go with Sonic Boom. Boom.
Mark.
Oh, boy. Once again, we have the situation again where an album that probably shouldn't win in this time period is going to probably end up winning. I love Megadeth. Okay, I've always loved the band. Rust in Peace is probably one of the greatest thrash metal albums in the history of thrash music. Holy Wars, Hangar 18, all that stuff. I mean, if you don't like that stuff, then you've got to go through hearing checked, as far as I'm concerned. And just even the stuff after A Countdown to Extinction, I thought was really good. And I even loved the stuff after it. I mean, they lost me on, you know, when they started doing Crush and all that other shit. But this album, see, the problem was I kind of checked out from Megadeth after a while. And I was all in for another reason, too, because my good friend and guitar teacher, Glenn Drover, was in Megadeth for a while, along with his brother, Sean, okay, which I know very well, both guys. And so I was all like, you know, thumbs up for them being in there, because Sean is a great fucking drummer and Glenn is amazing on guitar. You know, they could easily do the stuff that was in the catalog. So I was all for it. But, you know, it's not, it's like when you guys talk about albums like, you know, Dress to Kill, or you talk about those ones, how it's not the same. It's not, that's how it is for me with Megadeth. It's not the same compared to like Rust in Peace and stuff like that. This time period, they had a great producer with Andy Sneap here, and, you know, they did a lot of good stuff, but it's a good album, but I was kind of over Megadeth at this point. Okay. Heaven and Hell, The Devil You Know, I like this record. I was a big fan of this lineup of Sabbath. I saw them multiple times. I think I must have saw them at least 8 times once Dio got back with them, you know. And I love it. I thought that this was the lineup that should have continued. Too bad Dio passed away. I would have hoped for more records. Is it Heaven and Hell? No. Is it Mob Rules? No. But it's a good record. So, I mean, the opening 2 tracks on this, I mean, you know, Adam and Eve, Fear, and Bible Black, those songs are fucking really, really good, you know. And I'm sorry, but I like those 3 opening songs much better than the openers of Sonic Boom. But overall, you know, I think Sonic Boom overall kind of does come out a little bit over above it, because the latter half of the Sabbath album is a little weak in spots, but I mean, I wanted to pick the Sabbath over the Kiss easily because of my love of Dio and that stuff. But again, you know, if there were other albums from this time period in this, you know, in this comparison, I don't think that Kiss would have came out on top. You know, I mean, there's a lot of stuff. Like I said, I liked a lot of heavier shit than this. In that time period, I was heavy into like Devin Townsend and all these other guys that are going on. I mean, even Dream Theater, Black Cloud, Silver Lining. I mean, that's not their best Dream Theater record, but I would, if that was in here, I would have easily put that over Sonic Boom and easily in a heartbeat. So, but I'm going to go with Sonic Boom.
Ken.
Okay. Heaven and Hell. It's just a little too, I mean, they do well, you know. Ronnie James Dio is a great singer and all. But it was just that album was a little bit too dreary for me. I don't know, something about it. It was just too slow, too dreary for me. Megadeth, who I like, I think it's the material is not up to snuff on that one. They play the, you know, bejeebies or whatever out of a lot of the songs. I mean, it's kind of following the trend of some of the newer metal bands where they're just like, you know, just going, you know, crazy. And I don't like it kind of, you know, going that far. There's a couple songs on there are pretty good, but that's all for me. So Sonic Boom was, you know, a return for Kiss and trying to, you know, sound like they sound like the 70s or 80s, more 80s than 70s on it, but with some 70s tendencies with the little guitar licks and stuff like that. And it was a pretty good album. So I got to go with Sonic Boom.
All right. Megadeth. I love Megadeth. I've never missed an album. I don't agree with Mark on Rust in Peace, because I'm all before that. He Sells is my album. And
who's buying him?
And Killing Is My Business, just for its raw, brutal aggression, is just spectacular. Rust in Peace is a fantastic album, but it's approaching kind of the commerciality that Metallica did with the Black Album, and becoming a little bit more commercially palatable. So you lose some of that edge. Endgame is solid. Endgame sounds great. Endgame is executed perfectly. But it really isn't a standout from the other albums that Megadeth were doing in the period. You can pretty much interchange them, even though the members are changing, you know, more frequently than Dave's underwear. God. The Devil You Know. That Darkness needs a bit of caffeine. That is one hellishly turgid album. It is so one note. It just doesn't live up to the hope and expectations that I had thinking Dehumanizer, and where all those years on, so that I was completely delusional to think. But then you hear and listen to Black Sabbath's 13 album, and you've got a very similar case that it's the tempos on the debut have purpose and meaning and clarity of expression. And, you know, Black Sabbath as a song has purpose. All of this just did not. And I just found, you know, a lot of the lyrics were just like really bad Ronnie James Dio solo band casts off and rehashes. But there are a couple of great songs, as Mark mentioned, you know, some really good songs on it, but not enough. Sonic Boom sampled into all of those cookie jars of Kistery to try and give something to everyone, and had all these little different tastes and these little things that go pop, pop, pop in your ears. You're like, ooh, that's Elder. Ooh, that's Asylum. Ooh, that's this. Ooh, that's that. You know, somebody's a Kiss fan. That does far more to me than I'll listen to the Heaven and Hell live at Radio Music Hall happily. I'll listen to the one that followed as well. I can't remember what it is off the top of my head.
The Wacken?
Germany. Or whatever it was. The live release that followed. Because live, it's a much better, but it's also mixed with a few more tempo changes and style changes. And it's also got stuff from Dehumanizer perform live. So, Sonic Boom. We got everyone? All right, let's move into the final matchup. Monster. Versus Aerosmith's Music from Another Dimension. And I wanted to try and get rid of some of these repeat bands, but Daniel insisted on putting Van Halen's A Different Kind of Truth in there. So, Daniel, get us started, please.
Okay. So, I guess these albums are... It's the final Kiss studio album. Is it the final Aerosmith and Van Halen album as well? Yeah, I think that was the thought behind this.
Okay.
The final album from three iconic bands. Let's see how they did. Well, let's start off with Kiss, Monster. Revenge and Carnival of Souls felt like sister albums. The first one was better. The same goes for this Sonic Boom and Monster with the same lineup, like sister albums. To me, Monster is a way weaker album. I like the opening track and maybe one or two more, but then nothing really stood out to me. Aerosmith, a long album. It was a long album to listen through.
Too many songs.
The Heart in the Shades in Rome. Too many songs. And too many ballads trying to, you know, have a hit like they did in the, I guess, mid-90s or where they had those big ballads that even Paul tried to copy in 98 with what was that song called Nothing Can Keep Me From You or whatever it was called. Yeah. Most of these ballads are horrendous, unfortunately, on this album. But there are some pretty good songs in here. I really enjoyed... I haven't listened to this album a lot before either. Ken, I think, said he hasn't listened to it more than once or something. Lover a Lot, I like that one. Beautiful. Good songs. And The Belcher is on
it.
Once again. One thing I like about this album is that they use... what's the name of the guitarist? Joe Perry, yeah. They use Joe Perry, somewhat like Kiss used Ace Frehley from some records. Give him a song or two and let him sing them. And I really enjoyed the Joe Perry songs on vocals. They're a bit more raw, a bit more punky. Freedom Fighter, I think, was a pretty good song. So this album wasn't as bad as I remembered it, but it's way too long and too many battles. I would have liked to cut off like 5 or 6 songs, and then it would be an okay swan song for a band. And the final album was Van Halen's "She's the Woman." That's a pretty cool song with a cool guitar riff. Here and there, you can hear some cool guitar riffs from Eddie, of course. "Honey, Baby, Sweetie Doll." What a bad title for a song. So there's the good stuff, and there's some stuff that isn't so good. "Out of Space" and "Big River," I enjoyed those. So it's a pretty cool album. So all these three albums are pretty weak to me. But I think the one with most variety and the most interesting album to me is, and this is by no stretch of the imagination, one of my favorite albums, but against the other two, I have to go with Aerosmith.
Right.
What the hell?
What?
That's surprising.
I'm just trying to get my breath there after being shocked from that final conclusion there. Daniel, you hit me right in the solar plexus there.
Yeah.
Whew.
So
again, I was a little confused as to these albums, like why, but now that Daniel explained it, I understand now they're final records. Okay. As final records go, Monster, it'll be no surprise, I don't like this album. I find it unlistenable in many ways. Most of all, I mean, this is an album that you cannot listen to on headphones. It's just unlistenable on headphones. It's a terrible record. The songs, there's some good songs on there. But, you know, it's nothing compared to Sonic Boom. Okay, nothing compared to it. It's just a terrible follow-up, in my opinion. And, you know, you can argue with me if you want about that. But Aerosmith, Music from Another Dimension, I got that album given to me, the deluxe version of it. And what a mistake that was, because the deluxe version was even longer than the 67 minutes that, you know, was originally. They had another track on here that made it up to 72 minutes. Okay, this album is not the Aerosmith that I grew up with. This is not the Get Your Wings. This is not the Rocks. This is not the even, you know, Draw the Line Aerosmith. And I love the later stuff too. I really like Permanent Vacation. I love Pump. Okay. But then once we start getting later on in Aerosmith, like I don't like, you know, the after Get a Grip, I'm out with Aerosmith. And this is the greatest example of me being totally out. This album to me was a one listen and never ever again. I think it's a horrendous, terrible record. I don't like it. A Different Kind of Truth. I didn't know what to expect because I didn't think that getting David Lee Roth back in the band was such a great idea. I'm a Sammy guy. I think David's vocals were done.
Someone called Dr. Fuck right now. We've got a patient who needs the cure, doctor.
Well, I mean, David can't sing at this point. I mean, he's okay, but he ain't the David Lee Roth that we knew. Okay, but you know, I was surprised though, to be honest with you, with this record. There's a lot of songs in here that I actually kind of enjoyed. "She's the Woman's" good. I thought "Blood and Fire" is pretty good. "Bullethead's" pretty good. You know, there's a few songs in here that are actually pretty good. But "Honey, Baby, Sweetie Doll" is a terrible song, and "Beats Working" is not that good either. But, you know, it's not that bad, you know. And the one album that, and I know Daniel would never in a fucking thousand years pick this record, but the one album that should have been on here as a final record that would have destroyed these with an atomic blast and shattered into 10,000 pieces and is a final record, I may add, is Rush's Clockwork Angel would have killed every last one of these records instantly. In a easily, I don't care what Julian or anybody else says, like, that would have like destroyed the
progressive version of Heaven and Hell's album.
No, it's a really good record, fantastic songs on there, and that's the way to go out on a career. And you know, even though they weren't planning on it, to be honest, at that point, but you know, it's a great record, much better than any of these albums. But I'm going to go with Van Halen. I can't, in any good conscience, pick Monster because it's just crap. Halen, okay, so I'll go with the Van Halen because Eddie was still in decent form in this, and even though David was a little off his mark a bit, but it's still listenable. It's a record I listen to once in a while.
But we can all agree that vocal-wise, the Aerosmith record takes the cake.
Steven Tyler
is great on the album.
The songs are shit, though. It doesn't matter how good a singer he is.
Yeah, but okay, but compared to... Yeah.
Okay. You go?
Or no, it... I did not go.
You go first, and then I'll...
All right.
Last.
Okay, Music from Another Dimension. Yeah, I agree. Too long. I think the inspiration, the songs are just not there, fully there. Mostly filler, in my opinion. I agree. They're trying, and there's a couple of those ballads trying to recreate, you know, hits from, like you said, Daniel, the 90s. They just didn't work for me at all. I miss the old Aerosmith, you know, more hungry, grittier kind of sound. That one did not enjoy it very much. A Different Kind of Truth is interesting. The thing about that one is a lot of the material, or brought back a bunch of material from the past that they didn't use, or, you know, like She's the Woman and so on. Which was a good idea, but I think the main problem for me is it seems kind of not, it didn't seem consistent to me on the album. It's not bad, good playing by Eddie and so on. It's the closest they got sounding to trying to sound like the original Van Halen. Problem for me is David Lee Roth's vocals aren't, he couldn't sing anymore. I mean, he was always thought of that he couldn't sing in the first place, but you know, it worked back in the day, but now it's just like, no, it's just, it's not that. That's what I think brings it down. I think it would have been better had he had his original voice. It would have been a lot better. Having said that, Monster is not my favorite album either. It might be my least favorite Kiss album. You know, just thinking about it, I think it might be my least favorite Kiss album now.
Interesting.
Based on how much I go back and listen to it, there's a few good songs on there. You know, it's a brick-walled album, there are a few good songs on there that I like, you know, by half of it maybe. And that might be enough. You know, with like Freak and Hell or Hallelujah and, you know, a couple more songs, you know, Gene songs, is enough to beat those other two albums out, surprisingly. But so I'm going to pick Monster.
One vote for each album. Let's see which one wins.
This is the big decider here.
Monster. And I will say this, that at least the Kiss album has the most original songs and the least recycling of all three of these selections. Mm. I think Gene recycled Eat Your Heart Out is from 77 in its original form. But for the most part, it's got some good songs, but Paul can't sing. It's brick-walled. So I'm not going Monster.
Mm.
I am not. The sonics of that album are just... I'm sorry, Paul's vocals were past it, no matter how much we sugarcoat it and try. They did as best they could, and it
nearly gets passable, which is a shame because, again, he had some very good songs on that album, Long Way Down being one I always sing praises of. You know, and Hell or Hallelujah is a really good song as well. You know, so that's just two. Let's go to Aerosmith. Music from Another Dimension has a lot of recycles. Some go back to 1974 and were performed on the Get Your Wings tour and were transformed. Some are from Just Push Play and should have been left there. Others are from Pump Sessions and Get a Grip. And it is just a real hodgepodge. But at least on this album, we have all five original members. You have the vocal debut of Tom Hamilton, which is right up there with Bruce Kulick's effort. But Music from Another Dimension is just too goddamn long. You know, I got the Japanese version, which has everything, and the kitchen sink on that. You know, you have basically the first six songs are outstanding. Then it gets very, very patchy, and it gets very dire. You get Steven doing his solo stuff. But they have some great covers. Shaky Ground and I'm Not Talking are fantastic. Up on the Mountain is actually a really cool song. I do like it. Oasis in the Night is one of the worst songs I've ever heard. So it's you know, for recycling, it's hit and miss, but at least it's the original band for their final album. Van Halen. Yeah, they go back to 1976. They go back to 1983. Bullethead is recycled. There's movie soundtrack stuff, I believe, recycled. David's vocals are pretty bad. I would have much rather they'd done, I think, what was originally intended, which was to release some of the unused stuff in its original forms rather than re-recording it as they did with A Different Kind of Truth. The Sonics, the production, aren't up to par with the classic era. But what do I go with? I'm going Aerosmith. I can't pick that Van Halen album.
Brainwashed.
For how bad those classic songs sound versus the original versions, which we can hear pristine quality versions of now, which are just if it was those I was voting on, it would be without a doubt that album. And Bullethead by far is my favorite song on that album. But Aerosmith, for the first six songs and a couple of the others, you've got a full album there, which is far superior with all the original members, and at least everyone can sing as well as they ever could, so they're not hindered by the infirmities of age and damage that Kiss was and David was. So there we go. Aerosmith.
Interesting.
But apparently I lost my mind, which is definitely a possibility. You know, there's a lot of disagreement in the audience. And but again, all of these things are what you listen to. And if we ask any one of you to pick an album from each one of these years, you'd probably have different selections than the ones Daniel came up with and the ones that I injected into it to add some variety. There's no right or wrong answer. Yeah, you can like you can be the biggest Kiss fan in the world and still like another band's album more than a Kiss album. You're not handing in your Kiss Army card just because on this day I like an Aerosmith album. On many days, I like Aerosmith albums more than Kiss albums. I love Aerosmith. So sue me. All right, that's it. Agree with us, disagree with us. We don't really mind which one you pick because you've joined us and you've listened to this episode, and we appreciate that more than anything. I want to thank everyone who's taken the time to join us live today. Good to see some of the faces that we often see back after a while. I'm talking about you in particular, since we've missed you. But for now, that's it. Think of a topic for next episode. Chime in with your thoughts wherever you listen to this. But for now, from Daniel, who wants to go to bed, Mark, who wants to belch, Ken, who's just reasonable, and me, who's hungry. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.
Hungry.
Thank you for spending time listening to the KISS FAQ podcast today. All sales are final. There are no refunds.
If you'd like, look us up on Facebook or come over to the KISS FAQ message board and discuss the topic we've broadcast today. Don't forget to rate us on iTunes, Spreaker, or wherever you've listened to the show. We hope you'll join us again.
Music from another dumpster.